Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indest, your host, and with us today is Josh Lorre. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Excellent. Well, you got so many cool things going on right now. You're in charge of the new Michael Knott Kickstarter. You're in several bands, and you've got a studio at your house. You're doing some cool things at. I don't even know where to start. Where do you think we should start this conversation at?
Let's start with the Kickstarter there.
Let's do it. All right. So I guess a couple of weeks ago, I saw that there was a Kickstarter for the LSU album, Waking Up the Dead, which was a fantastic record when it came out. And you're trying to reissue it on vinyl and digital formats in a remastered version. Is that pretty much it?
That is it. We're going to have Jonathan Powell, or Jay Powell, who works at Steinhaus Mastering. He also is known as Cliffy Huntington from the band The Huntingtons, but he did PTSD for us. He remastered that, and he's done all the recent Daniel Amos remasters, which I think sound amazing, so I'm stoked to have him on board.
That is excellent. So remastering now, is a little, everybody's remastering everything. But Waking Up the Dead was one of those records that even, I don't remember how old I was, maybe 19 or so, 18 when that came out. What year was that?
Oh, it originally came out 89 and was re-released in 91.
89. I did have it on CD then in 91, right?
Yeah.
Okay, man, because I had the tape originally, and then I thought for sure that I had the CD, and I was like, maybe I was just making that up. So was that the 91 release, was that remastered?
I think I read that somewhere that somebody, I'm wondering if the original just didn't have mastering on it, and then they mastered it for, because the original came out on a cassette, had a different cover, and then Blonde Vinyl started going a little better, and you got distribution, and I think when they did this second release on cassette and CD that it was remastered again. I remastered for the first time, and then
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Well, that actually makes a lot of sense, because I remember I was super excited about this record coming out, the follow-up, The Shaded Pain. So I go to the Christian bookstore, have to get all the weird looks from the people behind the counter, either they don't have it, or they had one in stock, or maybe there was a demo that they, whatever. Anyway, I got it on cassette, and I was 17, I guess, at the time, and I was playing music, but I had no idea what mastering was. But I did notice a very huge difference between the way Shaded Pain sounded and the way Waking Up the Dead sounded. And I had no, understanding of what was really going on. I knew they were all great songs, but something just didn't sound the same. So this is one record that I've always been wanting to hear remastered. So you answered some of the questions there about maybe what happened back then. And that's good to know. So this is great. And I guess that's probably the reason this is the first one on the table, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We were thinking about doing Shaded Pain, but that already had a pretty good CD release, and you can still score vinyl copies around. And something about the mastering that was going on, and it was just the equipment that was available at the time, was not that great in the late 80s, early 90s and stuff. So after I've heard what people have done with the Adam Again reissues and the Daniel Amos ones, those albums seem like they kind of brought back to life. There's a lot of buried stuff, which I know is all over Waking Up the Dead. There's tons of layered vocal tracks, guitar tracks that you're just not hearing very well, that once the remastering process is done, it'll really brighten that up and, make the album kick a little harder and stuff. So
that's awesome. Well, for those who don't know, you're not just the record company guy with Michael Knott. You've written and played on a lot of his latter material besides your efforts in re-releasing some of this older stuff. So just for the people who don't know, tell us what you've been involved in with Knott over the last few records.
Let's see. The first one we did was the PTSD LSU record, and that was around 2009. And then we did Heaven High Lifesavers record. Then we did a live DVD and album for The Rocket of the Bomb. We did the whole record. And then we did another EP called Songs from the Feather River Highway. And that was kind of that coincided on a Kickstarter with the Rocket and a Bomb live thing.
Excellent. So yeah. Some of that has been, especially I think the song you co-wrote, Pictures and Cinders, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Yeah, just some really great, that whole record's great, but that song in particular, I was like, man, this is just some really great stuff, which is awesome for an artist who already has, you know, a million records out. It's good to hear something a little different, something new, but something still with a lot of enthusiasms. The passion is the right word, I guess, I'm looking for.
Right.
So that's exciting, and I'm sure you're excited to be playing with him and writing with him at this stage in his career, because he's still knocking it out the park, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's, I always want to hear new material from Mike, so just as a fan, even not as somebody who works with him, so it's always exciting when he's down to do something.
Well, I'm sure it is. So tell me what it's like working in the studio with him, because that's got to be... A, a learning experience, but B, just pretty awesome just standing there going, I'm playing bass on a Michael Knott song.
Yeah, the first one was the craziest to me when we did the PTSD record, because I had Jim Chaffin Crucified, who was a band I grew up on, huge fan of his, and then Mike, and I never met them in person aside from the first day in the studio, and then we went in on PTSD and basically wrote most of that record in the studio, and we did... we write stuff on bass guitar, then layer drums on that, and then after that first day we brought it home, and then everybody started adding all their stuff to it. And Heaven High was a little different. We had all the songs, they were written, and then I had kind of demoed guitar and a bunch of other stuff, so when Mike came up we could get his vocals down. I outsourced drums from a different studio and professional drummer on that, and then we had Masaki Liu mixed, and he played guitar, mixed, and did a bunch of stuff on that. So, and this last EP we did, we kind of did similar to PTSD. We wrote all the stuff while we were all hanging out, me, Rick, and Mike, when everybody's out for the Rocket and a Bomb concert that we did. We kind of recorded most of the EP at that time, and then I did demo drums on that, and then I outsourced to Jesse Sprinkle out of his studio, and then he sent his drums back, and then we started adding on top of those. So, and, yeah, it's a fun process. And, total learning experience. It's very, a lot more freeform. I'm very, like, have everything ready, because I grew up paying to go into studios, you know, and time is money kind of thing. So,
yeah.
I'm always like, everything needs to be ready to go. You need to know your parts kind of thing. And then he's a lot more improv, I guess, and capture the moment. So that was cool. It kind of loosened me up on other recordings for myself and stuff. So.
Nice. We'll take that little rabbit trail. Let's talk about some of the things you've done, because you've had a few projects out that vary in style, you know, Cast the Dragon or the shoegazer stuff or the Western Grey stuff. What's your focus for your stuff right now?
Right now I have a full-length Cast the Dragon album that Jim Chaffin played drums on, and Scott Shaw from Leopard played keyboards on it. Trying to find a solid guitar player for it. Who knows, like, what I'm going for. And it's going to be, I think, 17 tracks. So it'll there's 10 songs from the demo that I did. We re-recorded all those and then added a bunch more. And that's kind of my focus right now. And then as far as my stuff goes, and then after that, I'm going to want to do something a little mellower, because it's a hardcore punk record. I mean, it's like old school 80s, Dead Kennedys, Misfits, all that kind of stuff. So
this is, you said it was 10 songs from the demo. You mean the first record?
Yeah, we did I call it a demo in 2015, because I played every instrument, recorded, mastered it, did the whole thing myself, and I knew the songs could be a little better. I mean, I did a very lo-fi kind of Ramones, early Misfits kind of vibe, and now the songs, they have, like, Jim Chaffin's playing drums, so it's like, that guy's incredible, and I don't know any punk drummers that are honestly better than him. So he brought the songs to a total new life. A couple songs he did like a totally different beat than I had, and yeah, it's really cool. I'm excited to get this done.
That sounds great. Now, that one was on a label, though, right? The first record?
It was going to be. I ended up putting it out myself. I was going to do something with Skyburn's Black Records, but they the label's been kind of like folding lately. So,
well, let's talk about that, because you know, that's I'm always interested in. You know, I guess I was surprised that there was a lot of new Christian punk labels out. That was something I didn't have on my radar until I started seeing all the press releases. What's going on with that scene?
Well, Thumper Punk and Skyburns Black were going really good for a while, and then Thumper Punk, I think they're kind of on a hiatus or something for quite a while, and trying to think, Skyburns Black, they started gearing more towards the metal, which they mostly had to begin with, but I know both those guys, I know they've just been busy in their lives, basically, and haven't had the time to put into it like they used to. And I think the bulk of the records on those labels are like the bands are paying for their studio time and the recording process and all that, and then they'll usually, the labels will usually press the CDs for you and such, which is, that's been a cool deal to have, but.
Nobody's getting rich.
Yeah, nobody's getting rich off it at all. It's usually just done for the love of it and helping people out, so.
So putting stuff out on your own, though, how are you handling distribution? How are you getting the word out? How are you even getting anybody to listen?
I usually put stuff up on Bandcamp, and then I'll hit people up in Facebook groups, and that's been about it. I mean, it's not like a ton of people listening, but I don't know. I get a few people here and there. It's cool.
What about Spotify and all of that? Are you putting it out there?
I haven't gotten into that stuff yet. I'm not like super tech savvy still. As far as like, I don't know. I don't have anything besides Facebook that I go on, and I've been trying to stay off that even a little bit more than I used to be. So it's kind of, I don't know. It's a different world. I mean, I'll usually let the down the line zine guys know if I've got something coming out. They'll advertise, which is always nice.
Yeah, that's helped me out a lot too, because I'm no longer on Facebook. I put it like a compilation out, and I put it on CD Baby, and they distributed it. And I get a lot more listens through Spotify and iTunes and YouTube, which, you know, kicks back a little money to you than I ever have on Bandcamp. So, and from weird countries, you know, that kind of thing. So you may consider it. It's something to do.
And I know we have Bloody Strummers is up on iTunes, and I think it's on Amazon. I'm not positive on that.
Nice.
And, yeah.
But otherwise, you have your own label, right?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, it's just, I press my own CDs and put it out on my own Bandcamp kind of thing. And, I mean, it's all my money. So.
Right. I totally understand that. So the fundraising element, at least of the stuff you're involved in with Knot, let's talk about that, because there are, and I'll put this delicately on some level, but the other side of it is I kind of do want the conversation to happen, because I think there's a lot of, well, I'll just say it this way. There's people that I can no longer support because of the way that they handled their fundraising campaigns. And primarily it was two things. It was, one is they promised the best record they've ever done in their entire life, which that never happens. Right.
And that's subjective to the listener.
it's crazy. And I understand people need a certain amount of money. Maybe they're getting a little bit desperate in the last days, but that to me is like, what, you know, you can't do that, because no one's going to be happy with that. And even if half the people are happy, the other half aren't. And then anything else you say after that, they're not going to buy. And then the other side was just a way too much money and then way too pushy. And so I've had to unfollow people when I was on Facebook, or just get off their mailing list, because it seemed like every other day I was getting asked for some sort of donation or money or fundraiser or something. And I mean, I'm a musician. I've got, you know, 20 records out of whatever. I also have a job, you know, and I don't have to do that. So I got really turned off by a ton of bands for doing that. But you know, you have to get the word out there. So how do you do that while maintaining some integrity?
Hopefully I have maintained the integrity, but I have a Facebook group for not fans, so I'll usually post there, and I'll post on Mike's Facebook and then my own, and then the LSU Facebook page, and then I usually just ask people if they know anybody that's interested to just share it, and share it as often as they can, and, you know, just get the word out, because we're super grassroots, so...
But you're not asking for a lot. Even with the stretch goal, it's still not what a lot of people ask for even just re-releasing an album on vinyl or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I think some of that has to do with I'm only doing, like, random colored vinyl. A lot of people, they'll do, like, we're doing black vinyl, we're doing this color vinyl, this mixed colored vinyl, and there's, like, you know, all these different... That costs money to get the different colors pressed. I mean... I usually do the random colored vinyl. I think it's cool because each record's different, and it's honestly the most cost-effective from the place I get my records from. So it's kind of a win-win to me. Like, you're getting cool colored vinyl that is one of a kind, and, you know, nobody else is going to have vinyl that looks like that on that release. So it's kind of cool that way.
Right. No, yeah.
They do a lot of clear vinyl, and then there's either like the marbled looking kind. I've opened up a few, and I kept a few for myself just from the last one we did, because it's like, oh, this one looks really cool. Look at this one. It's pretty cool. And I think that's, I don't know, one of the things that some of the Kickstarters have been doing on the vinyl re-releases that I don't think it's as necessary. I think if you did two colors, just do black and then maybe one other color, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know who they're, you know, going through to get their vinyl pressed and all that. So,
but,
might be cost effective from that company or whatever.
So. Yeah. Are they doing that so people will buy all four colors as collectors?
I think so. I think there's some of that. I think there's these completist collectors out there. Maybe they got to have everything, you know. And I don't know. There's times I'm like, it feels like they're getting taken advantage of, people like that, but. If that's what they want to do, I guess, with their money, by all means.
Yeah, I just find it, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to harp on this, but some, you know, I've been legitimately in the quote-unquote Christian music business, either working in radio or when I lived in Nashville working for record labels for a really long time. And at this point now, when a lot of artists have taken control over their own career, which is something everybody has wanted, there's just a whole lot of, I perceive, mistakes being made, and people just kind of falling off the list of being friends or fans or whatever, because of, you feel like you're being, you know, you're now friends with a bunch of Amway salesmen or something. And it's just too pushy, and it's kind of annoying. And then they're trying to make their goal, and they know their 500 people out of however many thousands are going to pay a certain amount of money, but then they're only catering to those 500 people and not the bigger fan base or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah. And there's so much money to go around, for me. I don't have a lot of money to spend, on things, especially when a re-release for a vinyl record is, you know, $40, $50 or something. That's hard to do every month for someone.
Right. It totally is. And that's, that's why this campaign I ran for 60 days because, bands I would consider, I don't want to call them competition, but as far as fan bases, we have similar fan bases, and the same people are going to go buy our thing that's buying theirs. And I was at this point, like, about every time I was like, let's do this. And then all of a sudden, one of these other bands, oh, we got a new Kickstarter. And I'm like, hush, you guys haven't even, like, I haven't even gotten the discs from the last Kickstarter that you did. I'm still waiting on that. And now you've got another one up and rolling. It's just like, I feel for fans because I'm a fan too, you know, and I'm like, I can't contribute to every Kickstarter I want to because they're just one on top of the other, you know. I'll go for something that I just, you know, like recently the Altar Boys, they discovered a record that was recorded in '93 and it was pretty much lost. It's the Lost Altar Boys record. They found the masters and they finished it. So I was real excited about that because that's like a record I've been waiting for since I was in high school. Like, you know, never thought I'd hear it. And I knew what some of the songs were because I saw the Altar Boys live during this time period. And they had songs that were so good from this new record that's, you know, they stuck in your head. I had a t-shirt with lyrics from one of the new songs and the album never came out. So that was really exciting when they did that. But there's a few bands that it's just like every 6 months, like, oh, we're doing a new record. Here's a re-release, a new record and a re-release. And it's just like, I can't, you know, it's exhausting. Like, but I don't know if that's, they're getting what kind of income from it or what, but it's pretty crazy. And so this Kickstarter, I was like, well, I know there's a lot of people that are going to be wanting to do the other band's Kickstarter and ours. So I was like, I'm just going to run ours 60 days. And Kickstarter's like, oh, they recommend you do 30-day ones because it supposedly, I think it's just because the pressure gets put on because people always like, oh, the pressure's on. I got to contribute to this kind of thing, get it done with. But I don't know. I wanted to run it a little longer so people who wanted to do this other band's Kickstarter could do ours as well. And so ours ends July 18th.
Excellent. And just run through maybe some of the rewards you can get.
Let's see. We have, we're going to do, there's digital reward, so you can just get a download of it, a CD reward, vinyl reward, and then you can get CD and vinyl. Then I have some package deals that you can get, like the Feather River CD and then the Waking Up the Dead CD, and you can get Feather River vinyl and the other vinyl in a package. We have a big executive package. It's like a house show with Mike Knott, and there's a bunch of CDs that he's going to sign that I have copies of, like Bombay Babies and, gosh, what other one was there? Oh, Things I've Done and Things to Come and Feather River stuff. And then I'm throwing in the test pressing of Waking Up the Dead on the executive ones too.
Wow. So,
trying to, you know, spice it up a little for those. We had one that went pretty fast that Mike's, because of the artwork, we cannot find the original paintings for Waking Up the Dead or who has them. And blowing up CD size artwork to vinyl size artwork would look just, it wouldn't look good. So Mike's doing a new cover for this. So that was one of the rewards, but it got taken up first day, so that was cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm sure people were waiting for that to come out.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I love this record, and I can't wait to hear it like remastered. I'm not like a huge vinyl guy. I used to collect, and we had a cabin fire like about 20 years ago. I lost bulk of my vinyl collection, so I got a small one. I'll get certain things here and there, but I still do CDs mostly if I do buy a hard copy of something. So that's why I'm doing those too. And
was that one called? I'm looking to see if I have it in my Google Music, and I can't find it unless it was called. I have Gray Shaker, PTSD, The Great Prophet. This is the Healing. Was this one called Lifesavers Underground, or was it LSU with the?
I think it was an LSU. But
maybe I'll just look up.
And I don't know if Mike's, you know, like when we, that whole LSU, the LSU Underground thing is he doesn't like the band name LSU because of the college and everybody gets it mixed up. And
right.
And if you do any kind of a search, you're going to get college stuff. So I think that's a, why he added the underground at the end of that. He was going to change it when he did that, that the album Cash and Chaos World Tour. He was going to try to change the band name to Cash and Chaos at that time and then decided last minute against it. So
that was a good record.
Yeah, it is. That's another one I'd love to hear remastered because I think mastering kind of didn't do it justice from what Gene probably mixed. I mean, it's, I don't know. The old mastering back then kind of sounds like there's a pillow on top of everything, you know, and just, I don't know. Compared to what can be done now, it's not as good. But,
No, I'm definitely excited about hearing it. I don't know why I don't have it on my on my phone. That's kind of weird. So I wanted to play the bomb to end this show. So you may have to send me that if that's all right.
I can do that.
I love that album, though. I mean, I wore that tape out. So not only was it maybe mastered poorly, but after I played it 4,000 times.
Yeah, those old cassettes were awful,
yeah.
too. Like, the quality of them and stuff. The Christian distributors were not, they weren't getting the highest quality chrome cassette, you know, like you would get from a major label or something. So,
well, let me ask you this. Has anybody asked for new cassette reissues while you've been doing these Kickstarters?
Not yet. I'm kind of glad about that. I don't get the new cassette craze that's going on, because I'm like, do these people remember having cassettes? Because I thought they were a pain in the butt. If you left them in your car,
oh, yes.
It was warped. They got eaten. The sound quality is not like the greatest. Like, I don't get the whole thing. I'm like, I like the CD format. I'm still happy with that when I do. Or digital is kind of my thing. And vinyl's cool, but like, I don't know. It's hard with my young kids to have the record player out and stuff.
Yeah, ever since Hurricane Katrina, I try to keep everything to what I can carry with me if I have to go again. And establishing a massive vinyl collection for me. So I got some pieces that I really, really like, especially stuff from the 70s, you know, that got handed down to me
right.
that I remember listening to as a kid. So I definitely have some vinyl, but the idea of having a whole room full of vinyl and then maybe no electricity for a few months and 120 degrees, that just doesn't seem like a good investment on a
yeah,
on a grand
totally.
Scale.
And it's pretty humid down there, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's miserable.
So
it's not a good, yeah, it's, I would never order vinyl to get delivered in the summer. That would just be a waste. So it needs to be, you know, delivered on the coldest day of the year when it's like 60 or something, and hopefully it'll get here in one piece. The digital stuff normally is what I go for, CDs, but I don't think they're really selling laptops anymore with built-in CD players. So I think that's kind of going
to Yeah, you have to, even with the iMacs, you have to buy a drive that plugs in, because they don't have a disk drive on them, and that's not even a laptop, so.
Yeah. Is that what you're doing your music stuff on?
Yeah, yeah, I have an iMac, so.
Cool. Pro Tools, or?
I'm using PreSonus Studio One.
Oh, nice.
It runs a lot like Pro Tools. It reminds me of Pro Tools 6 and 7, which I started out on, and I thought that was still the best Pro Tools. Pro Tools started getting way too expensive for me.
Yes.
And I was honestly every time they released a new one, having a harder time figuring out what I was doing. And I thought it made mixing harder than easier. And PreSonus Studio One, like mixing, where I used to dread mixing, like I look forward to it now. So I enjoy mixing on it. It has great plugins, like the stock plugins that come with it are great. My inbox was like half the cost, and I can run more mics at once off this inbox than my old one. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Nice. Yeah, I moved away from. I've always worked on a Windows machine, and the program I was using, I really like from PG Music. It started out really cheap. 20 years ago, whatever, and it's still the updates are only like $29. It's called PowerTrax, but it's Windows that really is annoying me, especially Windows 10 with these auto updates. So I'm actually recording this now, and I've recorded all the demos that I sent you on a Zoom H4N Pro. And,
oh, okay.
Man, it's great. The preamps, I think, are really quiet, and I don't have to turn my computer. My computer's not even on right now. It's awesome. And I just turn this on and plug in the microphone and start talking. And I feel like I get a pretty good recording. I got to bounce tracks when I'm doing music stuff, but that's kind of fun. You know, I haven't done that in a long time. But I don't know. I think I'm moving away from computer based recording just for my own sanity, I think.
Yeah.
It's frustrating sometimes.
It totally is. And yeah, they'll update some program on the computer, and then all of a sudden your stuff on your recording program isn't working, and it's a disaster most of the time. So I usually don't do a lot of updates on my computer. I just, 'cause as long as I can go check my email and record. That's what I want a computer for, kind of thing. So
you have a studio in your house that you just like. So walk me through what you would do with the next Knott project. Would he come over and sing at your house, or does he have a studio, or how do you work with him?
A lot of times with the Knott stuff is we'll be together for the initial writing of the stuff, and then he'll usually go back down to Southern California, and he records over Rick, I'm sorry, my lip's all numb from the dentist right now. Rick McDonough, Danow, that's how it's pronounced. He's done a lot of work with Mike, too, and he's played on pretty much every record we've done together. He played guitar on the Feather River EP.
Yeah.
And some stuff on PTSD, and then him and Mike have done, they did Struck Last May together and a few other projects. So usually Rick will record Mike's vocals and some extra guitar stuff, and then after that we'll decide who mixes. If Mike and I do another project, I kind of want to do just me and him and see what the two of us can do, kind of thing. So I'd want him to come up. Hopefully he'd have some songs ready to go, and then we would usually lay down either a scratch bass or scratch guitar and then throw some drums on it and then kind of layer off that. So.
Very nice. So if you do a new project, if that stretch goal is met, it's going to be, what, a band project, or you don't know yet? Too far away?
I don't really know yet. I would like to, like I said, I'd really like to just see what Mike and I can do. I can play multiple instruments, Mike can too, and I don't know, between the two of us, we should be able to knock something out.
Very nice. Well, I hope you make the stretch goal, because I'd like to hear something else. He mentioned I'm not on Facebook, so this is all hearsay, but I think he mentioned somewhere he had 10 projects out there just waiting to get released. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know if it's 10, but he's got he's doing, with Jeff Elbell, he's doing Pennies for Stormy Lane. That's kind of in the middle process. He had a Losing Angel, which has been done for years, and it was lost, and then it was found, and I thought it was going to be out by now. I don't know what they're waiting for on it. And I think that was recorded in 2006.
Okay.
So, and it's the three songs I've heard off it are awesome. Like, it's very Aunt Betty's kind of vibe, and I think people are going to like it a lot. And then, let's see, he's got Even Star album that he's working on with Rick, and another Struck Last May with Rick, and All Indie 2 EP with Rick, so... That's five, and then the documentary is being made about him. So,
all right, who's in charge of that?
David Deese. How do we pronounce his last name? He did the Larry Norman documentary and the Frisbee documentary.
Okay, cool.
So it's total pro kind of vibe happening, and he's got most of the interviews done for it. I'm supposed to be in it, but I don't know if I'm going to be or not. So it all depends on we can work something out to be interviewed. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to
that. That'll be awesome.
Yeah.
I think it'll hopefully boost some interest, because a lot of people, like, I constantly see on Facebook, it's like, you're still making music? And I'm like, gosh, where have you been, dude? People post all the time. Or like somebody's like, oh, I haven't heard stuff from you since like 92 or something. It's like, oh, he's got, you know, good 30 releases or something since then. So,
yeah, it doesn't take much to find out what's new or what's going on. I'm excited about both of those things that are coming out. I guess one issue that is probably difficult with so many releases is trying to you mentioned a couple of records were lost, but I'm sure with labels shutting down and masters not. I mean, I'm sure that's kind of a big headache too, right? To try to find out who has what rights to what and.
Yeah, and that's why with the re-releases that Mike and I plan on doing, and this is kind of a trial run. If this one goes good, we'll do more. But if, it doesn't, then might be the last one. I don't know. But we're going to stick to his Blonde Vinyl releases first, because he has all the rights to that. It's no headache, no hassle. And then Cash and Chaos is another one he has all the rights to. Stuff like trying to think of what records. Rocket and the Bomb, Fluid, the Aunt Betty's album, Hearts of Care. I'm trying to think. He's got quite a few records that he doesn't own. And I've always got people like, oh, let's do Strip Cycle on vinyl. I'm like, well, that's tooth and nail. And it's a big hassle, you know, that I'd rather not have to go through if we don't have to. So, and on vinyl-wise, I mean, there's Great Prophet, Scream, Brittle Siren, Pop Life, This is the Healing, and Waking Up the Dead. So that'll take a few years to get all those out if we are able to. So.
Yeah, Waking Up the Dead could use a new remaster too. Not Waking Up the Dead. This is the Healing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think Pop Life too. Which
that could actually use a few more songs.
Yeah, it could. I love that album. The songs that are on it are pretty awesome. So.
Yeah, that one, I'll be honest. Can we be honest here?
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to offend you. And Mike, I hope I don't offend you either, but that was the one. That one kind of bothered me. I'll be honest. As I mentioned, how hard it was to get. Since we're dissing other people with their Kickstarters, I'll just be honest about this. I was cutting the grass in the summertime in New Orleans. It's hot as heck here, and I had to drive way out to the family bookstore, spend whatever it was, $12-$15 or whatever, to get it special ordered. So I was making like $5 an hour. So 3 hours of slaving in the heat. For a record with eight really, and then the reprise. I was kind of pissed. I'll be honest about that because I was like, man, what is this? I worked that hard to buy this record. So anyway, that's just me venting a little bit.
Did you save your buy four get one free stickers?
I did. I did that. And there was actually one good Christian bookstore that had, like, you know, the Joshua Tree and some things like that. I think I bought Shaded Pain there and, you know, things like that. But it was just Pop Life was the one that I've always had a problem with, I guess.
Yeah. I think it could have been longer, that's for sure. But it has some of my, like, there's some songs on there that are so, like, it's a crazy thing. Like, that's a classic.
Well, I sent you my version of that song.
I haven't heard that yet.
You did. I sent it to you, and you said, can you send me the individual tracks? And I said, no, because I lost it.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to dig that out again.
I did that for the Knot tribute,
right.
And then I had switched computer stuff or something, and I couldn't find it anymore. I guess because I don't know, I had some plugins for the synths or whatever, and then I found a rough mix that I had done. I was like, hey, this isn't that bad. You know, I did the double tracking vocals and the double tracking guitars and this kind of synth lead. And
I'll have to pick that up.
I had sent it to you. I ended up doing something else for it. There's a lot going on, and we're running out of time, and I could talk about Michael Knott for, you know, a few more hours, but people need to just go and listen and check out the Kickstarter and stuff. So does Knott have an official webpage, or what's the best thing to do to navigate this?
I don't think he does have an official page up. Just kind of the best way to get info about Mike is from the Knottheads fan page, the knottheads.com. And or it's called Knottheads on H. I can't remember.
I think so. Yeah,
that's a great website. That's like the most detailed, and then it's kept way up to date all the time. So
it is.
It's not an official website, but to me, it's like better than most people's sites. So.
Yeah, it's extremely detailed. I did. Sometimes I get links to my Bandcamp page from there because. Not painted some album covers for me. So people were looking at that, going that deep into what he was doing.
Yeah.
So in fact, most of the paintings in my house, I have 5 or 6 Knott paintings in my house.
Nice. You got more than mine.
Well, actually I have more than that because I commissioned, 3 for other people, I think.
Well,
so yeah, it's cool stuff. So anyway, we're running out of time. How can people find you?
Me? Yes. You can see the best ways to get a hold of me would be my email. I can drop that if you want.
Sure.
It's josh.laurie@gmail.com. And Facebook, I go back and forth on. I try to keep my friends list really low and just manageable, and the people that I know and kind of trust and like kind of are on my Facebook. So I'm usually not, I'm not one of those people that like takes every friend request kind of thing. Cause I don't know, I started to dislike Facebook that way. So
yeah,
I mean, just, it's one of those, like, you like Mike Knott, but doesn't mean we're going to be like the best of friends.
Right. Right.
So like, yeah. And then there's a lot of Facebook pages I have. I have the, let's see, there's the LSU Lifesavers Facebook page. There's Cast the Dragon Facebook page. And then the Mike Knott, it's called Knottheads, Mike Knott Fans group on Facebook, which is kind of the best place for on Facebook for the Mike Knott stuff. And then, yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to email me, feel free. I'm always down, so.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And we're going to wrap this up with the unmastered old version of the bomb.
Cool.
Since we'll see you.